to Seymour from the Front Pew podcast, coming to you from the broadcast studio at Seymour First Baptist Church in Seymour, Tennessee, and featuring thoughts and discussions around loving God, loving others, making disciples, and living the life. I am your host, Tiger Brooks, and now on to the podcast. All right, it's the episode that you knew was coming. If you knew that we had a brand new minister on staff, you probably thought at some point they've got to do a podcast episode to introduce him to the rest of the church.
Hey, listen.
And so we are here today to bring you all things Sean Trollinger.
Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm a little upset. I didn't realize all that was pre-recorded.
You thought I said that every single time. Well, welcome to show business.
Peek behind the curtain.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the Wizard of Oz, you know, just don't go back behind the thing if you don't know what's one back there who's pushing the buttons. So Sean officially started the beginning of last month, though this has been in process for several months. Sean is our student minister. And as such, he came on board. He serves under our family pastor, Jason Vineyard. And obviously with that title has to do with all things leadership over our student ministry. But before we get too far ahead of ourselves and kind of flesh all of that out, let's talk about Sean. Let's talk about where you came from and how did Sean get to where he is today?
So I am born and raised Greensboro, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Only place I've ever lived other than college, which was in Virginia, which we'll get to. Grew up in church. I went to a very, traditional, like Southern, small little Southern Baptist church, white building out in the middle of nowhere. And I don't know exactly how we ended up there. I think it was some type of family had went there, that kind of thing, and ended up there. And grew up in that church from birth through probably about third grade. And at some point in there, it was around kindergarten or so, there was an Easter service. And during that Easter service, the pastor brought out little goodie bags, baskets. And if you went up and got saved, you got an Easter basket. And so I wanted to be saved that day. And so I remember just looking at my parents and going, yeah, I want to go up there. My parents, of course, were like, oh, this is great. And I was like, yeah, it is great. I get an Easter basket. Yeah. So we went up. And
we talk about our salvation was bought with a price. That's not exactly what we were talking about.
Yeah, chocolate bunny. And I think it was a coloring book or something. And so blessed by that. But it was a weird dynamic in that church. Me and my brothers were the only real kids that were in the church. So, like, my mom was running the nursery with my little brother, and my dad was teaching me and my older brother. So there wasn't a whole lot of spiritual growth happening there, and I didn't really understand any of it. I just was like, oh, this is what we do every Sunday morning, night, and Wednesday. And so continued to go there. And I think my parents started to see that, like, this isn't one for them. I think they realized, like, this isn't doing anything for us. Like, we're not going to church. We're just taking care of our kids. We just do that at home. And then they also realized, like, not a lot's happening there for our kids. And so there was a stint where we weren't in church, not long at all, probably less than a year, while we were trying to sort out where we were going to go. And that's how we ended up at South Elm. Some friends through sports told us about their church, and so we started visiting there. And that's where I would say my relationship with God really started to happen. We were at a summer camp, Center Kid, and during one of the messages, the camp pastor staff member just started, you know, kind of walking through the gospel, and it hit me. I was in probably fourth, fifth grade, and hit me like, oh, I definitely do not know any of that. I thought, you know, Christianity and salvation was like, well, yeah, I go to church on Sunday and Wednesday, and I do these things and whatnot. And so I realized during that camp, I was like, oh, I am not saved. And he went into some detail of, like, the difference between salvation and those who aren't saved, which is heaven and hell. And I was like, I don't know that I want to experience any of that. And so I went and had the talk, and we got to walk through what salvation really meant. And I think at that point, that's when I truly accepted Christ, and still kind of took, there was a stint of not a lot of growth. And I think that was just being young. I think I do believe I fully understood the gospel at that point, just not a lot of growth happened after that. After that. And so when I got into youth group with that goofy fella, that's where I think growth really started to happen. And I began to understand the word of God and who God is and the relationship and those kinds of things. And those balls began to roll and develop and got to see who God was. And when I began to feel kind of like, maybe I want to do something involving ministry, is we were at a summer camp for Infuge summer camp. And it, one of the nights was about like serving, about being called to the ministry. And I remember I kind of listened to that message, and our senior pastor was there. And I specifically remember me and him sitting on a park bench after the service. Everybody's running around doing their thing. And I looked at him. I said, "What do you do?" And he's like, "Well," he's like, "What do you mean?" I was like, "Well, I know you like preach on Sunday, but then what do you do the rest of the week?" And he's like, "I just hang out." So I was like, "I want that job." Of course, he was joking. I didn't realize that at that time. I was like, "I want that job." And so we had a long talk that evening, me and him, and then he brought Jason into it. And we just started talking that night about, well, what is ministry? What does it look like to serve in ministry? And at that point, it was more about I wanted to help people. Mm-hmm. I was like, I want to help people. I want to, you know, be there and help people and that kind of thing. And it grew as I began to get opportunities within the church of understanding exactly what I felt like my call was. And part of that was Jason allowed me to be an intern with him, and I got to work alongside him and see some of the behind the scenes of what ministry is, from preparing a lesson to vacuuming contents out of a van that shouldn't have ever been in a van, like a milkshake that sat there for like 3 months and all that stuff. So I got the nitty gritty, but got to begin to experience what ministry was, the ins and outs of it. And I think where I really began to see my call was when I was in the transition period of high school to college. I had felt like student ministry was it. I had that kind of passion and desire of like, man, I really love teaching students and being involved with students and getting to be a part of their life. And during my freshman year of college, my life kind of fell apart. So my mom had struggled with alcoholism for a big part of my life that I didn't even know about. It was all hidden from me and my brothers. And in her journey of trying to reach sobriety, she got not the best advice from others. And so some of that advice was that she needed to leave kind of our family. And so as she was struggling with her addiction, trying to reach sobriety, she came to the conclusion that what was best for her was to leave us. And so I specifically remember I'm home one weekend, just a normal weekend from school, from college, and I'm watching TV and my bedroom door opens and my mom's got a suitcase in her hand. My dad's got tears in his eyes, and he just looks at me and says, "Mom's leaving." You know, she says she needs to leave. She says that it's best for her and her health and that kind of stuff. And so at that point, I didn't see my mom for well over a year. Part of that was me. I was pretty angry, pretty upset, did not want to see her, with the situation that we were put in there. And then
can I have a timeout?
Yeah.
Just clarification. So freshman in college, mm-hmm. You knew at this point that she was struggling with
I did not.
Not at this point.
This all came out when she left.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So you're all of this is happening in that moment. She's leaving. You had no backstory there. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. So
continue on.
After her leaving, that's when Dad began to explain to us why she was leaving and kind of the details of like, Mom's been dealing with this. I mean, since apparently I was in like elementary school, no idea. They did a great job of hiding that, which is probably a good thing that I didn't know that as a child that was going on. And so, yeah, she left well over a year. And in that time, my older brother, who I did know struggled with addiction, specifically drug addiction. And I was aware of that because I saw that in his life. He overdosed on heroin. And so, the first time he overdosed, I was the one who found him. I was up in the morning. It was during the summertime. I was waking up to go run before I went to the church to do my internship. And it was real early in the morning. I'm getting ready and I heard a weird noise coming from with somewhere in the house. And I thought it was our dog. And so I went to go find her. And then I found my brother, unconscious, just kind of convulsing, didn't, you know, completely not there. And so then like I wake up my dad, dad's 911. I'm trying to wake my brother up. Not something any 18, 19 year old should ever have to experience. Definitely scarring. And so he ends up in the hospital. A lot of complications with that overdose. And so he ends up getting out. He has another overdose not long after that. And that was the real big one. And that put him in the hospital for several months. We weren't sure if he was going to live from it. And so in that time of him being in the hospital, my dad was going to visit him. My mom was going to visit him. And so they kind of reconnected in the hospital and got remarried a short time after that. And so it shows God's kind of uses real weird stuff for a good cause. But before all that happened, kind of them getting back together, lots of anger in my life, lots of not understanding why, because I was in the mentality of like, I've always been in church. Our family's always been in church. My dad and mom have always served in church. Why is this happening? You know, with all within a couple months, mom or, you know, years or a year, you know, mom leaves, brother ODs. My dad was an absolute emotional wreck. I'm trying to navigate how to be in college while all this is going on. And I just remember not knowing what to do and being so frustrated and so angry. I actually got to the point that I closed God out. Never did I get to a point of like, God's not real and did that kind of thing. But I just kind of was like, distance myself, which obviously isn't the answer. But I was like, I gotta take a break. I gotta, you know, cause I was so mad. When I finally kind of had a breakthrough of like, okay, this isn't the best route to go. I need to seek God rather than run from God. He really began to just open my eyes as like, I'm preparing you for what I'm calling you to do. And it kind of hit me like, if I'm going to be a student pastor, student minister, I'm going to go and deal with students who have parents who are divorced, have people in their life that are going through alcohol, drug addiction. They're going to have all these things that I'm going through in a very short span of time. They're going to have in their life. And how much better is it to go to a student who's hurting and say, I've been in your shoes. I know exactly what to tell you to do, rather than I've never been there, but here's my advice for you. I think it's a lot more impactful to be like, I've been in that spot. I know exactly how you're feeling. Let me tell you what I did. And so that's where God began to open my eyes is I want you in student ministry where you're helping kids through what you're going through right now. And a big reason for that was, that is what provided me with the stability and the support to get through that was Jason and our church and our youth group. I will never forget, within the chaos of all this going on, me and my dad went down one Sunday to pray, just me and him, and stand up and turn around. And it was like the entire church was down there with us. And that's kind of the realization of like, this is what I want to be a part of.
Oh, that's good. Well, I mean, that's a lot. There's a lot to digest there and reflect on. But so you've touched on obviously your salvation experience and really the circumstances. And I think the call that God places on our lives as individuals, especially as it relates to coming into vocational ministry of some description, God calls us to a variety of things. And I don't think people understand that. God can call you to continue down the path toward being an engineer or, being, the best, sanitation worker on the back of a trash truck that there ever was. You know, he calls us to just be salt and light in whatever sphere where he places us. And yet, the call to vocational ministry or be it missions or ministry in a church or whatever, it's going to be unique to all of us. And we all have, and we've all shared some of those stories and the things that happened in the background that were seemingly unrelated to ministry. But you look back with the benefit of hindsight and you say, God used that because now I can see how that has strengthened me and my ability to relate to people, to relate to circumstances, and to do whatever it is that he's called me to. And that's a really, really cool thing. And so you experienced the call. You probably talked to him a whole lot about that process. And then when you decided that, how did that chart your course educationally and, ministerially? What did that look like from then on?
Yeah. So started interning with Jason South Elm 10th grade summer, 10th grade year of high school summer, and just continued that on into college. And unfortunately, that time, seminaries didn't have that beautiful 4-in-1 program where you get your MDiv and your 4 years in 5. So at that time, they said, look, don't go. Jason, our senior pastor, said, don't go to Bible college, because you'll do Bible college and then you're going to have to go to seminary and you're going to learn a lot of the same stuff and you're going to be bored out of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
They said, go to your undergrad and just do something fun, something you enjoy. And so I always been kind of an outdoors person, love agriculture, love farming. And so I was like, well, I'll go do that for my undergrad. And so I have two degrees. My two undergrads are agricultural science, agronomy, which is crop sciences, and then agricultural sciences and agribusiness, learning the business side of things. And so that's where kind of I started. And then right after that, I went straight into Southeastern Seminary because I knew I needed Bible knowledge and that kind of thing and the understanding and development there. And so I did 2 years at Southeastern Seminary. And during that time, I had started working at Lebanon Baptist Church where I was before Seymour. And two of the pastors there were associate professors or whatever it's called, or adjunct professors at a place called Carolina University, not like UNC nastiness, but like Carolina Divinity School. And so they're like, look, if you transfer your credits over, you can get a Master's of Arts in Christian Ministry in a couple semesters. So I took my credits from Southeastern, transferred them over to Carolina University or Carolina Divinity School, got a Master's of Arts in 2 semesters, and then transferred credits back over to Southeastern. And so now I'm currently working on my MDiv. But all that time I've been in the church for the most part. I was intern with South Elm. That intern turned into an interim when Jason came to Seymour. They dropped that into a 19 years old. I don't know why in the world they did that, but it was a great, great experience. I definitely had, looking back in the moment, I thought I knew exactly what I was doing.
Yeah, I got this.
Yeah. Looking back now, I'm like, absolutely not. I didn't know what I was doing. From there, once South Elm found a full-time person, I knew that I needed to step away from South Elm because I was kind of hurting his ministry in the way of like the kids still viewed me as their leader. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem. Like, continue to push them, guys. He's your youth pastor. You need to go to him. That didn't happen. So I was told my now wife, we were engaged at that point. I said, we need to go to a different church to allow his ministry to flourish and happen. Mm-hmm. And so during that time, there had been a individual from South Elm that went to be a pastor at a church that was dying. Mm-hmm. And so I reached out to him to find out if he wanted help. And they brought us on as kind of a family director, and that was just part-time. I was working a secular job while doing that and trying to help there. And we were there for a year and a half. So within that time, engaged, got married while we were there. And it was a church called Reedy Fork Baptist. After being there for about a year and a half, I realized, at least from my vantage point, is that the only way this church was going to survive was to be adopted by another church. There just wasn't enough healthy DNA within the church to do anything in that community. And so it was one Sunday, and there was the stories I could tell you about this church are unlimited. But after a rough Sunday, I went to the pastor and I told him, I said, look, I will stay if we can begin to go down the road of looking at what adoption looks like for this church or fostering or something. If you are unwilling and if you think the church is unwilling of doing that, then we're just going to be done. We're going to move forward. Because at that point, when we were going into the position there, we were told that they had somewhat of a children and a student ministry. When we arrived there, that was not the case. There was zero students, and there was three kids. One of them was a little boy. He was like maybe three or four. And then there was two girls that were sisters, one in like third grade, one in fifth grade, something like that. So there was no really existing anything. And they kind of expected something to just happen out of nothing. And there was just no way. And so he agreed. And I think he began to see that there was nothing me and him could do to save the church. Like, there was nothing that we were going to implement or develop a program that was just going to make this thing take off. And so Cameron and I began to help them develop a committee. And once they began searching, that's when we stepped away, because we knew we're not going to stay here. We don't need to be on the search committee with you all. And so they've been adopted. They are doing a lot better than what they were doing, and they're going through that process. And so in the midst of this adoption time, COVID hits. And so that was just a whole mess. And so within COVID, very behind church and technology. And so me and the pastor are trying to set up ways that he can still do services online and that kind of thing. And so once we got that set up, that's when we stepped away. And I knew I had no desire to be in a church that was just doing online service. And so we started looking around, and we found there was only one church anywhere near us that was meeting. And it was Lebanon Baptist Church on their ball field. And the first Sunday that we were away from Reedy Fork, we were just going to take a rest. We were like, let's just, because at this point, if you know my wife, or as you get to know my wife, she does not like to be in the front of people. She was leading music, which is not her. It was the need of the church, and so she did it. I was running sound slides. At this time, they still did CDs where you record it and hand it out to whoever wants a CD. I don't know why. And so I'm doing all of these things. I'm also doing announcements and prayers. So like, me and the lead pastor are like, during service, making laps in the church to make sure everything's running. And so it was like, we were just tired. And so the first Sunday that we were gone from there, I remember we were like, let's just not do anything. Let's just relax on this Sunday. And I was sitting outside drinking coffee, messing around in my flower beds. And Cameron was inside. It was a Sunday morning, the first one. And like 20 minutes before church would start, I walked in. I was like, what are we doing? Like, we can't skip church. And I was like, that one starts at 11 o'clock. Let's just go to it. We don't have to talk to anybody. Take our ball chairs, sit on the field, listen, leave, you know, don't have to worry about anything. And so we showed up and we're walking through the parking lot. They've got a big welcome tent, and I, you know, Southern Baptist born and bred. And I said, we got to go check in. They got to know that we were here. So we go and we check in, and just so happened Pastor Nick was there, and he had a big Southeastern logo on his hoodie. And so I just asked, oh, you're at Southeastern? And we started talking. He found out I was at Southeastern. I've got a desire to be in ministry and blah, blah, blah. And so we made that connection, and we went and listened. It was a good service. The worship was great. The message was good. It was funny. The message was on scripture that Cameron had been doing in her personal Bible study. And so that was just like another one of those signs. And so we continued to go and continued to develop the connection. And Pastor Nick and his wife Hannah and Cameron and I developed a good relationship. And so he kind of started to dig in and find out what I was wanting to do. And when he found out I wanted to be in youth ministry, he invited me to come help one Wednesday night with youth ministry. And so I went and did that. And then I was given the opportunity to teach in youth ministry, and then given the opportunity to intern. And so all this happens within just a couple of months of us being there. And so that internship turned into an interimship. The youth pastor at the time had some stuff happen in his family that he had to make the choice to step away from the church. And Nick says, hey, I think you need to be at this family meeting that the church that night. We weren't even members yet. And I was like, I'm not a member. Why do I need to be there? He's like, I think you should be there. And they announced, they're like, we're going to ask Sean to be the interim pastor. And I was like, sitting in the pew, like, whoa, what? I had no idea at this point.
Seriously. Yeah. That was not discussed ahead of time.
No. And so I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. And so I jumped in. And so still bivocational, I had a job with Guilford County and was Guilford County government, and then was doing this part-time, which was nice because it was in the midst of COVID. So I was really spending like 40 hours a week at the church, because all of my Guilford County work had went virtual, and I wasn't having to do anything except check emails. So I was pretty much doing full-time church stuff. And so It was definitely a weird way to get into a position because, like I said, intern to interim. The interim lasted about 6 months. And then the deacons and the lead pastor came to me and said, would you consider being the full-time person? I was like, yeah, absolutely I would. And so was blessed with that. And it was a really cool opportunity because it wasn't like something new where I didn't know students. I didn't know the people. We'd been there for 7-8 months at that point. And it was like, we've already built all these relationships. This is so natural. So like, when they announced it, it was funny when they announced it to the students, like, Sean's going to be the full-time youth pastor. They're like, wasn't he already that? they were so confused. And they were like, well, he kind of was and he kind of wasn't, but he's going to be the guy now. And so, so we started that and it was a super awesome journey. We were there for about three and a half years doing ministry there. And it was a big, big blessing. And so, yeah, the whole time it's just been different avenues that God has opened up that in the moment didn't really sound, it didn't make a whole lot of sense, especially like for the Reedy Fork situation. Being at that church, I remember those many times Cameron and I sat down and like, why in the world are we here? Mm-hmm. But what's crazy is where we bought our house in North Carolina was so we could be close to that church. Never heard of Lebanon Baptist Church, never knew it was a thing, never anything, any relation, but we were 2 miles from the church and never realized it. And then, it shows like, oh, God sent you there to open doors for you to be here. And so it was really, really big.
Very cool. So out of all that you just said, with an agricultural background, can you help me with my yard?
Yeah, yeah. I redid my dad's whole yard. We killed the whole thing and have regrown it from scratch.
So, okay.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, though. I'll tell you that.
Take a note. Shelby, make a note. I'm just teasing. No, I mean, that's a tremendous story. And I love to hear the stories of how God, takes us here to get us there, to allow us to experience this, to prepare us for that. It's just really cool. But so 3+ years of experience there. And then all of a sudden you get a call from him.
Yeah.
So let's just quickly, we don't want to make this an all day affair, but what is that like? I mean, obviously there's a years of relationship between you two, the thought processes and what God was doing and telling you and doing in your heart to think, okay, maybe now is the time for us to think about, picking up roots and moving away from the place we've always been, which I know a little bit about. And going to another state and starting a ministry in a church like Seymour First.
Yeah. So, Jason, it was actually about this time last year. Mm-hmm. He reached out to me and he said, hey, we're going to start looking for a student minister, student pastor position. And the person be working with me. And, I just want you to know and, you consider applying, blah, blah, blah. I remember I was like, no, I'm good. Like, I love where I'm at, and I don't have any desire to get up and leave. And
well, and y'all were still pregnant.
We were.
So expecting.
Yeah. Another time out. So you mentioned Cameron.
Yes.
His wife, Cameron. Y'all have been married how long now?
We have been married for, it'll be 5 years this year. Okay. Yes, September.
And have, as of several months ago, a beautiful child, Hallel.
Hallel, yep.
And outside of my own child, probably the most beautiful child I've ever seen in my life. This girl lights up the room. Girl. She is a pretty little girl. At any rate, so back to where, you got the call, I was like, no thanks. That doesn't really sound like me.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like I said, it was about a year ago this time, and I was like, no, I don't think so. We were pregnant, and I could tell you Cameron was not going to fly with that. No. She was like, no, I'm not leaving my mom and this place. Especially, she had developed a very deep connection within ladies that are helping in the youth ministry at Lebanon. And so just did not feel like it was the time at all. And so I shut that down pretty quick. And so Jason kept me up to date, here's where we're at and that kind of thing. As far as they were going through the application process. And then he told me like, yeah, we didn't really find anybody. I was like, oh man, that stinks. So, didn't really take that any way of like, oh, maybe this is God saying like, we need to consider it. And so he comes back to me a little while after that. And I still was like, nah, I'm good. Like, I don't think so. And so we talked about it a little bit more. And I think one of my biggest struggles with the idea of leaving is a lot of times pastors leave when things are going bad. But that wasn't the case. Our student ministry had thrived. We were having students accept Christ regularly, be baptized regularly. We had the student body was growing, outgrowing our resources and our space and that kind of stuff. And I was just like, why would I leave when it's going like this? And so he and I talked about that, and something I never thought about is something that Jason had presented me, was like, it shouldn't be leave when it gets tough. It should sometimes be leave when it's good and leave it in a way that it continue to be good. And so that's when I started to kind of think through it and consider it, and talked with him some, talked with Corey some. And I was like, I still don't know. And I remember when the text we received, at that point we had the baby, he said, hey, we were at the beach. Hey, it's reopened. If you want to submit an application, here are the dates. And I just showed Cameron, and we were sitting in our room at the beach feeding Hillel. And Cameron goes, and? And I was like, I don't know. Maybe it means something. She was like, "Nah." And so for a little while, it was no. And we talked some, and I talked to Cameron some, and I was like, well, let's just submit an application and see. Doesn't mean we've got to go. I was like, we might not even be selected. Like, there's going to be other applicants. And so we submitted one, and we made it through the first round or however many rounds, and continued to roll forward until we got to October, when we came for the first time to kind of meet the committee and do some in-person stuff. And that's kind of when the real set in. And I was like, oh, this is like real. And I think it began to set in for Cameron too. Like, this is a real thing. Like, we might end up here. And what's crazy is if you, you know, rewind to 6 years ago, it was a joke. Like, oh, what if we end up doing ministry together, Jason? What if we end up at the same church? And it's always, oh yeah, that'd be real cool, you know, but never really a thought of like, this could really be something where we're serving the Lord together. And you know, our families, which I guess we just kind of became a family with Hillel, but like, we've always been close. Like, Cameron and I have been together, she was in 10th grade and I was in 11th grade, which that's a story. I don't know if we want to go into that, but we started dating, and you know, she started going to church. And so ever since then, the Vineyards and us, we've been connected. And so it's always been kind of that thing of like, well, what if we were together doing ministry together? And so like, that realization, that reality started to set in of like, this could be real. And I remember going home from that October trip when we were here and just us talking, and it was like lots of tears, both like anxious tears, but then also tears of like, we might have to step away from something we love. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of emotion with that. And so we started to kind of navigate that together, Cameron and I, and talking through what would this look like. Definitely stressful. You know, oh, we got to sell a house, we got to move, all this stuff. And we get to December, where we came for the in view of a call. And I remember up to that point, it was still kind of in my mind of like, well, it's not real yet. It's not real yet. Might say no. And I remember after the vote on that Sunday morning, and y'all brought us downstairs to eat lunch, and the church voted yes. It was like, I wasn't even there mentally, because that's when it hit like, whoa, this is real. Like, we're going to be here doing ministry here. And then it was like, on top of that, it was excitement. But then it was also like, that's when it really hit of like, whoa, I've got to go home and tell a group of people I love, like, yeah, I'm leaving. That was a tough car ride home. That was a long 4.5 hour drive. Just every little bit you got closer, it came more and more like, we are going to have to really break some hearts. And so it's been a crazy journey. But now that we've got here, I think Cameron and I both have seen like, this was in God's plan, and just different ways that he's opened our eyes, and different things that he's done in our life to open our eyes to different points. It's just like, this was his plan, and he brought us to this point, and he's going to do something with this. And so it's exciting, still nerve wracking because we're only here a couple weeks, but it's been a blessing so far.
Yeah. Well, it's been an awesome journey to kind of watch. I mean, I'm not really on the outside. I'm kind of a part of the deal, but really imagining what it would be like to be in the part of this relationship and see it change to where, you know, we see each other every dang day now.
And the first couple of weeks actually living together.
Exactly.
With Snowmageddon and all that.
Yeah. So just a couple of minutes, we want to wrap this up, but just from your perspective, let's have a dialogue more than a monologue about what it has looked like thus far, you know, and what it's like for you to say, okay, I'm going to turn over the teaching reins and let somebody else have responsibility for teaching these kids that obviously you've had the responsibility for quite some time. What's that look like for both of you?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it is an interesting thing. And, you know, I think one thing I'll point out as far as what he was talking about too, that, you know, that never in any of that was there pressure to say, man, you got to do this. Like, this is like you, I mean, there was encouragement and it was really just kind of leaving it out there saying, man, this is, I want you to know this is available. And I would obviously love for you to be here. And I think God could do some incredible things, but you've got to seek the Lord's will. I mean, that was a constant conversation that we had that, you know, if it's not right, I get it. Our relationship's going to continue to go on as is. And our relationship has been a blessed one. And I think a lot of youth pastors have these kind of relationships with students, but, you know, in a lot of ways, there's also a uniqueness to it that goes back to like third grade of knowing him and seeing him grow and then getting him in the student ministry and watching him grow and just a confession when he came saying God had called him to ministry, he was the kind of student that my initial reaction is, yeah, he's doing that just because he wants to be seen. Because he was kind of that goofy kid that was the class clown and always wanted to be seen. And it was kind of like, all right, we're going to see. So we put him in some of the dirtiest, nastiest positions in internship to say, all right, let's see if this is real.
See if he'll make the cut.
That's right. And he did. And he pursued. And we kind of just continued to try and speak into that and encourage him in that walk. And God's done an incredible work in his life. I think from my perspective, when we were moving down this road, I knew that one of the challenges for me was going to be letting go because my heart is still students. And he knew this, that I'm still going to speak into students. I'm still going to be involved and I'm still going to get involved and be involved in the student trips and have opportunities to speak because that's still my heart. But I knew thinking about it was if it's Sean, if that's where it goes, I let go of that a lot quicker. I mentioned this to, at some point in the process, whenever they were here in view of a call, that I kind of made the point that the reality is, I knew, take myself out of the family pastor role, put myself into the dad role, I knew that the guy that we were calling in to be this student minister more than likely was going to be the one that was going to be a student minister to my kids. And when you put that into perspective, there's a real reality of all right, I've got an invested interest in this and who that person is. And you know, across the board, Sean was always at the top of that list that seeing him and what God has done from the outside. Again, we've always had conversations about student ministry and that's always been kind of a continued, conversation for between us. But a lot of that too is allowing God just doing his work in his life. And so it's been an emotional roller coaster, even for me, because not only is it exciting for me to see what God is doing again, I have an even more invested interest in the success of Sean and his ministry because it's here, but also the relationship that Sean and God has given between me and Sean allows me. It's just an exciting thing for me to continue to see him succeed and grow. And for the most part, again, there's going to be times that, he may fight me a little bit to take some things, to run. And I've told him, I said, fight me on it. I'm gonna fight back at times, but we're gonna push and pull. And there's a relationship that I think we have there. And for the most part, hopefully I've allowed him to run, and do, and, I've not told him no quite yet.
Yeah. Well, it's, and I think that's healthy, really. I mean, yeah. It's healthy when you know, as they say, iron sharpens iron. Mm. And you know, you bring collective experience and your own personalities and your own strengths and skills and talents. And, you know, I think the cream rises to the top. You know, the best ideas can win out. Mm. So I think that it serves both to make each of you better in what you do, and then it makes the church better, makes the experience better, makes the student ministry better. And so that's exciting for us as a church. Mm-hmm. And so something that should not go unsaid, and so I'm going to say it before we close this podcast, is that he's got a tremendous beard. I mean, he qualifies.
Not a tremendous mustache. Goodness.
I think we need to bicycle that thing once, you know, on a Sunday.
I used to just have a mustache.
Let's play with that.
Cameron hated that.
All right, real quick, let's kind of put a bow on this. But, you know, a couple of weeks in, what has it been like? I mean, has it met expectations? Has it been different than you had imagined? Where are you in that?
I feel like I have brought the plagues on.
Yeah, it's been Snowmageddon, Jason's, you know, house floods. Well, there is a correlation now that you mention it.
Yeah, like, so that's been something. I don't know if we brought curses with us from North Carolina or what. But no, it's been real good. Like Jason said, I think we really tested the relationship. Yeah. A week in, we were at the Vineyard's house for 7 days back-to-back because of the snow. And we didn't, nobody killed each other. So,
which was coming off of Strength to Stand, being together. Yeah.
And so, we survived and thrived. But no, it's been good. And I will say the relationship dynamic among the staff is unlike what I've seen before. I have been very accustomed to go in my office, do my thing, leave and go home, and, you know, could go days without really talking to anybody. You know, that's not the case here, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's nice to walk in, and it's like, it's community. You know, you're talking, and you're, oh, yeah, this happened yesterday, this happened, oh, I've got that, or this, and you've got this community, and so that's been a blessing. Mm-hmm. Have not really experienced that before, and so that's been really, really nice to be a part of. And so far, I've really enjoyed it. I think, you know, Cameron and I have enjoyed it. And I'll say, you know, Hillel is 8 months, and this is the first time she has ever been in the nursery. At our previous church, she never went to the nursery. She stayed with us the whole time. So,
very
been good. Yeah, my wife is trusted, and so she sent her in, and that surprised the mess out of me. So, it says something.
Well, that's awesome. All right, we're gonna wrap this one up. And again, Sean's been great getting to know you and having you here, and we look forward to years of what God's going to do in your ministry here at Seymour First Baptist Church. Thanks for taking the time to come on the podcast. And you can tell we always have an opportunity at the end to encourage people to like and share if you found something valuable here. If you've got, you know, relationships with folks who have kids and, you know, they're looking for a church with a good student ministry, then, you know, maybe share this broadcast with them. And tell them we've got a pretty good one going over here. And so tell them bye, Sean.
See you later.
Hey, listen.
Thank you for listening to Seymour from the Front Pew. Our sole desire for this podcast is to glorify God by educating and encouraging His body. If you would like to learn more about anything you've heard today, feel free to reach out by email at staff@seymourfbc.org. or by visiting our website at seymourfbc.org. If you're located near our community and do not have a church home, come worship with us at 10:15 a.m. on Sunday morning. Until then, we pray God's richest blessings on you and yours as you love God, love others, make disciples, and live the life.